Welcome to Locked On NBA. I'm Wes Goldberg. The Rockets beat the Spurs by two. Was that convincing enough?
And I'm David Ramil. It looked like Brent Forbes' three-pointer might have gone in. The Spurs should protest.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. On today's show, we'll discuss the most interesting trade targets who can swing the season and LeBron's chance to avenge the worst loss of his career. But we'll start in Dallas, where the Lucas Mavericks ended the Bucks' winning streak at 18 games. Kristaps Porzingis and Seth Curry each had 26 points. The Mavericks made 16 three-pointers in the game. Meanwhile, Giannis had 48 points and 14 rebounds in 34 minutes. And down 112-99 with a minute and a half left, the Bucks went on a 12-4 run to make it a four-point game with 10 seconds left, but couldn't quite get the win. Had the Bucks won, they would have joined a group of nine teams in the modern era to have won 19 in a row. Seven of those teams have either made or won the NBA Finals. David, did this streak make you believe in the Bucks as a contender?
I'm just surprised that we're talking about the Bucks and not the Mavericks. I mean, they're the ones that knocked off this team without their star player, Luka Doncic, and yet the story of the game is still Milwaukee. As far as your question is concerned...
Well, wait, do you think that the Bucks then were maybe overlooking this Mavericks team without Luka Doncic, and knowing that the Lakers were coming up on Thursday, maybe a potential NBA Finals matchup? Maybe, was this an issue of maybe the Bucks just overlooking their opponent tonight?
It's possible, but I was watching the Mavs Heat game on Saturday pretty closely, and the Heat fell into a similar trap where they actually had a 20-point-something lead at one point. And then Dallas, without Doncic, who was injured in the first quarter of that game, wound up storming back, chipping away slowly, tightening their defense, getting some key contributions from Tim Hardaway Jr. and Jalen Brunson. I mean, they just seemed to shoot particularly well once Doncic went out of the game. And so they have some more depth than I think a lot of people are giving this team credit for. But at the same time, I don't know that Milwaukee was overlooking them. I think they were pretty cognizant of the fact that Dallas is still a capable team, even without Doncic. They're not as electric. Perhaps they're not as potent offensively, but they're still good in their own way. And certainly they show that they have more than enough to upset a potential title contender as far as the Bucks are concerned. But,
with Luka having, sprained this ankle, he's going to be out for at least 2 weeks. I mean, this could be a real stretch for the Mavericks to prove that they are a playoff team, because I think a lot of people were looking at them and their fast start and everything. And I think at this point we assume that Dallas will make the playoffs because the kind of bottom half of the West just isn't as good as we expected it to be. But this will be a good opportunity for number one, I think it's going to be great for Kristaps to just sort of put his imprint on the team in a way that he wasn't quite able to do with Luka there, right?
Sure. Yeah, he hasn't had that opportunity since Carmelo Anthony was traded away from New York. I mean, it hasn't been he hasn't had his own team, ownership of a team in years, it seems like. And this is a good opportunity for him to kind of understand what that's like and then be a capable second scorer there for that team, because that's the role he needs to play. I mean, he can be a versatile defender, he can be a playmaker, but he needs to be a more aggressive scorer. And I think he's had to take a step back because of Doncic's ability, but now with Luka out, that gives him an opportunity to continue to prove himself in that regard. To your original question, though, as far as the Bucks are concerned, the streak didn't make me a believer in them as a contender, because I think these kinds of things tend to get overblown during the regular season. I know it's a fantastic statistic that you put it out there about the nine teams in the modern era, but at the same time, I really have just liked the fact that everybody aside from Giannis Antetokounmpo has kind of stepped up their game a little bit. I know Eric Bledsoe is out with injury, but he seems to be a little bit more consistent than he's been in the past. Chris Middleton has become very, very solid in his second role there as a complimentary scorer to Antetokounmpo. And, of course, their depth has just really taken a leap this season, I think. So I'm still a little concerned about whether or not they have another level to reach in the playoffs. But for now, I'm a believer that they are one of the contending teams in the league.
I know that Giannis is again playing at an MVP caliber level. His numbers are even better than they were last year. It's insane what they're doing, and they look even better than they did last year in the last regular season, but it's really just because Giannis has stepped up his game. I think maybe those other players have gotten a little bit better. They've gotten contributions from Kyle Korver and these other guys, but I don't know that it's so much better that it makes any real difference in a playoff setting. And like I said, the problem in last year's playoffs wasn't that they didn't have enough Giannis, and they have more Giannis this year, but I don't know that it's going to fix what their issues were last year. I mean, Eric Bledsoe was good in the last regular season. He crumbled in the playoffs. I don't know that they have that second or even third guy that really needs to be able to step up and help this team get through whatever team they end up facing probably in the Eastern Conference Finals, whether it be Philadelphia or one of these other teams that have sort of come out of the woodwork of the Eastern Conference. So I still would bet on them coming out of the East because it's in general weaker than it was last season, mostly because Kawhi Leonard is no longer there. But I haven't really changed my perception of who the Bucks are in a vacuum.
So do you think they're one of the teams that would probably benefit most from acquiring somebody in the trade market or perhaps a veteran that's waived towards the end of the season, the buyout market? I mean, what's the next step for them? Do they need somebody who's proven, who has championship-level experience? Because I'm thinking on that Bucks roster, is there any player who has championship experience? I don't think there is, right? I mean, Kyle Korver, did he win one in Cleveland? Or I thought he came the year after they won it. I don't think he was there with the Cavaliers when they won the championship. So I'm looking at that team, and they don't have a single player on there who's ever won a championship and knows what it takes. I mean,
well, maybe the model for them is sort of then what Toronto did last year. Like, Toronto had Kawhi Leonard, who had championship experience, but maybe they are a move away. Are they maybe two moves away? They lean all the way into, okay, we have Giannis as our MVP guy, and then everybody else just sort of falls into place, which is basically what Toronto was last year. I mean, Toronto got huge contributions from guys like Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and stuff like that. But, you know, I think you could put Chris Middleton up in that sort of type of player, but I don't know that they have a Pascal Siakam type of producer outside of Giannis. I don't know that they have like a Marc Gasol type of just savvy veteran guy who can lock it down. I mean, Brooke Lopez has been good for them, but you know, how much more depth do you want at that position? So maybe they just do need to add a couple guys. We know that they're interested in a guy like Andre Iguodala. That would make a lot of sense, but I don't know how they swing a trade at this point.
It could
be tough.
If you're looking at what Toronto did last year, which is the acquisition of Marc Gasol, that was a huge move for them, and they had to give up a fan favorite in Jonas Valanciunas in order to acquire Gasol. I know there was extenuating circumstances regarding Gasol's tenure in Memphis and whether or not they could re-sign him and things of that sort, but at the same time, I guess the plan was that they realized that they would need his defense against the teams that are currently in the Eastern Conference that they were going to go up against, like the Milwaukees, like the Philadelphias, to go up against Joel Embiid and things of that sort, to face Al Horford, you know, had they faced the Celtics in the playoffs last year. So what's the path for Milwaukee? Who are they looking to? What's their edge against, you know, Philadelphia? Philadelphia obviously has Horford and Embiid now. Do they need a wing defender?
I think they could get by Philadelphia. If I'm Milwaukee, my concern isn't getting by Philadelphia or whoever's in the East.
It's the Lakers.
My concern is who's in front of me in the NBA Finals.
Right.
If it's the Lakers or the Clippers, as good as Giannis has been, I don't know that they have enough at that point. Maybe that's why you're looking at an Andre Iguodala type or somebody else. But if I'm Milwaukee, I'd be a buyer right now. And I think they will be. It'll be hard to actually make a deal. But we're going to talk about that in a little bit. The trade season has unofficially begun. Who are you toying with the most in the trade machine?
If you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us at Locked On Live on Twitter, and we'll share and retweet.
On December 15th, players who signed this offseason became eligible to be traded, signaling the unofficial start of NBA trade season. David, who do you think is the most interesting trade target in the league right now?
Oh, I mean, look, I know that when I told you who my candidates were, you were a little surprised. They're not necessarily big names, but I just don't know that the big names are actually going to get moved this year. It seems to me more likely to be a quiet trade season and one that'll just be fringe players being moved around because there just doesn't seem like a superstar deal that's ready to take place at any time soon. So the guys that I'm looking at are actually quality shooters, guys that have kind of stepped up this year as far as being competent shooters and providing some of that depth on offense that a lot of contending teams could use. Maybe a Davis Bertans out of Washington. Obviously, the Wizards are struggling a little bit, and they have to pay Bertans as a free agent this summer. Their general manager's already said they want to re-sign him, but maybe they don't have the money with John Wall and Bradley Beal already under contract there and everything else that's taking place. Maybe they can't afford a Bertans, and maybe rather than lose him for nothing in free agency, they'd rather trade him at some point this year. And then there's also Marcus Morris Sr. of New York's Knicks. You know, obviously the team isn't doing very well. I think that's an understatement. But he's shooting extremely well, I think almost 44% from three-point range. And this is a guy who can make a difference for a contending team. He was very good with Boston last year. He can continue to be a productive player for a contending team. So these are the kinds of players that I'm looking at, guys that are playing very well this year, maybe on contract years, or maybe looking to prove themselves and are hoping to capitalize by making a deep run in the playoffs.
We should just call it the Morris Twins Memorial Trade Deadline, because it always feels like in one of these trade deadlines, one of the Morris Twins gets moved as a quote-unquote difference maker for a playoff team. As far as Davis Bertans, I actually think the Washington should hold on to him.
Sure.
And give him that extension and re-sign him if they can, because he's young, he's a good shooter, he fits alongside Bradley Beal. He's maybe like the only good story coming out of Washington right now for a team that kind of needs them. And you put him next to Bradley Beal and a healthy John Wall, and I don't know. I'm not saying that team's all of a sudden a contender, but the Wizards don't have a ton of assets. We kind of went into the season saying Bradley Beal's your one asset. Do you kind of have to move him if you're going to rebuild? Well, now maybe Bertans becomes an asset for you. I don't think trading him completely launches a rebuild, but he could be a piece for you down the line or a building block for you down the line. As far as Marcus Morris, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. We just got done talking about Milwaukee. I think he can actually make some sense there, given his versatility.
Mm-hmm.
You could play some interesting lineups with Giannis, Marcus Morris, and Brooke Lopez, I guess, and do some things that way. But I don't know that any of those, like, those seem more like when Philadelphia got Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli a couple years ago. Like, those are those kinds of players who obviously made a difference for Philadelphia in that postseason run.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll be that sort of team that takes. I mean, Houston would make a lot of sense too, but it's like all these teams that we talk about, is what are they going to actually trade for these guys, right? And is it even worth it for Marcus Morris? Do you believe in Marcus Morris as more than just like kind of a good stats bad team guy, or do you really think he could help a contender team?
I think he could help. I mean, it's not just about being a good stats and a bad team. I think he's putting up better stats than he has in the past, but you know, he was with the Celtics when they were making their playoff runs a couple of years ago. I think that he could still be a competent player. I think he understands. I think he's better than his brother Markieff at this point. I think he understands a little bit more about what's required of him. I think his game has evolved and adapted a lot more than his brother's, and I think he still has that understanding of what it takes to kind of get to another level there. So I have some optimism in that his ability to contribute at a pretty high level.
My most interesting trade candidate is LaMarcus Aldridge. I did go for the star here, but it's because I do think LaMarcus is weirdly tradable, and I say that because some teams might look at what Toronto did last year in acquiring Marcus Gasol, a veteran guy who's just stable, decent playmaker from the block, can get you some points when you need him, just smart veteran, just guy who can help bolster your bench or become a starter for you, and I kind of look at LaMarcus Aldridge as that, and the Spurs this year are a little bit in, not quite in the desperate position that Memphis was in last year, or I shouldn't say desperate, but that kind of clearly in the rebuild mode like the Grizzlies were last year.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they should start thinking about getting into that phase. It's pretty clear that things aren't what they were in San Antonio. LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan, like that only got them so far. DeRozan I thought about including as my most interesting trade candidate, but I actually don't think that DeMar DeRozan can help a team that much. Not like, it's tough to bring in a guy like that midseason and actually have him contribute. But LaMarcus Aldridge, I think, could fit in with a team pretty seamlessly and really help a contending team maybe get over the edge the way that Marc Gasol did last year for the Raptors.
But what is it that he provides exactly? He doesn't stretch the floor. I mean, he shoots 1.7 attempts per game from three-point range. He's hitting 34% of those. So he's an okay three-point shooter. And he plays, what, solid defense at best? He's older. I mean, that mid-range game and his scoring punch is always going to be an asset.
Solid defender, has the mid-range game that spreads the floor more than a lot of centers, and decent passer. Like, he's creative enough offensively that in a playoff setting, I think he can get you a bucket, which is really what we're talking about here. I mean, when push comes to shove and you just need a basket, he still has that mid-range shot, that long wingspan that's just that. And that raising mid-range kind of fadeaway jumper thing or turnaround jumper that he's got, that's just so difficult to defend. I think those are the things that matter.
Mm-hmm.
In the postseason.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to think of the teams off the top of my head that might use somebody like that, and there aren't many. I mean, given his playmaking ability and everything else, maybe, honestly, I know it sounds like I'm being a homer here, maybe Miami could package something along the lines of Myers Leonard and maybe somebody else in order to pry Aldridge out of San Antonio. I mean, he does provide
a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, he does provide some scoring, and his passing does fit into that system. But, you know, Leonard is shooting, you know, three-pointers at a high rate than anybody else in the league, you know, although, you know, unlimited attempts.
Well, and that would be the question that Miami would have to ask themselves. Do we think that this Myles Leonard thing is for real, or do we want to get something a little bit more with a little bit more track record and a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge? And we know that Pat Riley likes LaMarcus Aldridge, right?
He does,
we
yes.
know that he tried to pair LaMarcus Aldridge with Chris Bosh at one point. But that to me is a really that's what I'm looking for. And the other thing with LaMarcus is he comes off the books the year that Giannis becomes a free agent, so it wouldn't infringe on the Heat's future plans the way that a Chris Paul or a Kevin Love would.
That's right.
So Miami makes a lot of sense to me for LaMarcus Aldridge. Again, Milwaukee makes some sense to me for LaMarcus Aldridge. If you're just trying to add some depth in the front court there, I think he could play. He could spread the floor enough where he could play with Giannis. I'm trying to think of some other Western Conference teams. Not quite there yet with any of those teams.
Trailblazers? They could sure use somebody like
Portland.
That.
Portland? There you go. Yeah, him and Damian seem to get along. Do you think anybody is good enough to actually swing the championship odds, though, in the league as far as trade deadline candidates?
I mean, none of the players that we're talking about. I mean, LaMarcus provides some oomph there, and the other guys do as well, but I just not necessarily pushing the... I know somebody that you had mentioned to me was a Drew Holiday. I think obviously he plays defense at a very high level, and he's an incredible playmaker. He can play off ball. He can, you know, make plays for others. So much that he brings to the table. That seems like a guy who's of the players that have been rumored as far as trades are concerned, his seems to be the highest ceiling, or at least he could be the one most likely to swing a team towards championship contending status. And I don't think that the Pelicans are actually looking to move him. I mean, maybe his teammate JJ Redick. I mean, again, another guy who provides a very specialized skill set, but maybe for a team that's looking for additional 3-point power, he certainly fits the bill, and he has enough playoff experience. You know, that could be another guy there. But again, we're talking about guys that are very limited. Nobody seems to be a catch-all, or certainly not a superstar. As much as we want to call LaMarcus Aldridge a potential star, I just don't think he's that anymore. So I think he's more of a watered-down version of a star player, and he still has some glaring weaknesses as far as his range and I think overall defense is concerned.
LeBron James will have a chance to avenge the worst loss of his career tonight in Indiana.
If you're looking for a last-minute fun sports gift for the holidays, go to breaking.com/lockedon. Breaking Tee makes sports t-shirts around teams' passion moments. Great for all fans. Go to breakingtee.com/lockedon, and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and fun sports gifts.
Happy birthday to Buddy Hield, who turns 27 today. Buddy Hield has taken the second most three-pointers in the league and is averaging a career-high 22 points per game. David, do the Kings have a building block in Buddy?
You know, it's hard to say that he could be a building block at 27. This is a player who's already, well, older than a lot of guys who are considered, you know, actual building blocks. And I just don't know that his skill set in today's league, as good a shooter as he is, I just don't know that he's a realistic building block. I mean, he has to be. My idea of a building block is somebody who's not necessarily a generational talent, but at least greater at one special skill, either as a playmaker like a Ben Simmons or as a shooter like Steph Curry. Those are legitimate building blocks, you know, earlier on in their careers. At 27, what is it that Buddy Hield does so well that you could consider building on? And he seems like more of a complementary secondary score type thing. I mean, a fine player, good overall player, that's great. More along the Klay Thompson mold, more along the lines of saying Toronto had a building block in DeMar DeRozan. I mean, I know their skills are very different, but a limited type player who won't take you to that next level. So a guy that's nice to have on your roster, not your foundational piece, however.
I'm glad you brought up Steph there, because Kings fans love to compare Buddy Hield to Steph. The Kings love to compare Buddy Hield to Steph. But what Buddy Hield can't do that Steph can do is do stuff with the ball in his hands. I mean, Buddy Hield is, like you said, complimentary, like off-ball guy. He's right. A catch-and-shoot guy, really. I mean, he could do a little bit in the mid-range. He's got a fundamental enough dribble where he can make stuff happen. But, I mean, Steph Curry is a great passer. He's basically a primary ball handler. Buddy Hield is a secondary ball handler. I think there's just so much more. And like you said, he's 27 years old. I mean, we forget this a lot. I mean, he's older than Bradley Beal. He's the same age as Kyrie Irving, and he's not good as either of those guys. The Lakers will play the Pacers tonight for the first time this season. They'll be hoping for a very different outcome than the last time they met. When the Lakers visited Indiana on February 5th in last season's game, the Pacers tied a franchise record with 19 three-pointers, beating the Lakers 136-94. The reason we bring this up is because it was the most lopsided loss in LeBron's 17-year career. And tonight, the Lakers enter the game having won 17 of the last 18, but the Pacers have won 11 of their last 14. They're on a three-game winning streak. David, can the Pacers knock out the Lakers again?
No.
All right. That's our show, everybody.
No. I think the difference is Anthony Davis, right? I mean,
yeah.
Who do they have on that Pacers roster that can separate themselves and try and limit what Anthony Davis does so well? His game is so good. I mean, it's one thing to try and limit whatever version of LeBron you get, whether it's passive playmaking LeBron, a more aggressive scoring LeBron, or a combination of both. But there is no answer for Anthony Davis. To me, I think he's just been so sensational. Watching him on Friday take on the Heat, just seeing him get shot over shot over one of the best defensive players in the league in Bam Adebayo, and you just can't help but realize how unstoppable he is. Like, he is so dominant. His shooting is such a nice addition to his overall skill set. You look at his length, his size, and his array of moves. There's so much speed and length there. I mean, Domantas Sabonis, Miles Turner, none of those guys are capable of limiting what it is that Anthony Davis does. And so he is the difference maker there. And that's why I am a believer in the Lakers' ability to knock off these teams in the regular season. And I'm starting to come around to your side of things and thinking that the Lakers are they're more of the title contending team than the Clippers are right now.
I was about to say, it sounds like you're on my side, that the Lakers are better than the Clippers in a playoff setting.
Yes.
But look, I think last year's, you know, giant loss, LeBron's worst loss in his career, just reflects just what LeBron's year was last season, right? And then you look at what they've been able to do this season, and I just expect them to keep on winning. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. For David Ramil, I'm Wes Goldberg, and this has been Locked On NBA.